Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Why does Ben Simmons want out of Philly? Where are the best places for him to go? Will he ever be the number two on a title-winning team? The only question left is, say it with me, you win. Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to the live Green Room show on YouTube as well, simulcasting across the whole internet. Coming at you today, this morning, on Sunday at about 9 a.m. Pacific time. Glad to see everybody out there, both on YouTube and on Green Room. Don't forget, if you want to come in the show and chop it up with me, you can download the Green Room app, find me. It's in the link in the description below on the YouTube side, and request to speak, and I bring everybody in all at the same time. We have a nice, rollicking good time and a good conversation. So how is everybody going? It looks like we already have a request. Like, I kind of want to jump into the Ben Simmons discussion. I'm preparing a video on this for a couple of reasons, but let's bring in Martin right now and just see what he has to say. Martin, how's it going today?
Yo, what's up?
Hey, you want to talk about Ben Simmons?
First off, you know how like the MJ versus LeBron comparisons has been going on? What area do you think that LeBron is better than MJ on both offense and defense?
Ooh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. I would probably say what area would he be better at? I mean, shooting-wise, I think Michael is a better shooter overall consistently, and if they had the three-point shot as an emphasis, I think we would have seen that too, and even just form-wise. So, ball handling, no. It's hard to say what offensively. I suppose you'd say that LeBron's a better passer, and that also goes in line with him just being bigger and taller, and he can see easier over at defenses. So I'd say he's probably better at passing than Michael. Defensively, I think pound for pound, Michael is still better. I know LeBron has more, he could guard more positions because of his size and his strength and his explosion. But I just think effectively and impact-wise, Michael was if not more impactful defensively than LeBron ever was either. So there's not a lot of things, but you're splitting hairs at that point because they're both that good. But I don't know. What else do you think? What am I missing here that LeBron might be better than Michael at?
That's a good question to ask. But like, both MJ and LeBron, they have both higher IQs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but like, I say obviously I'm just a goat.
I agree too. I do think that I've done a couple of videos, at least one or maybe two on this, and I don't know. I just feel like, full disclosure, I grew up in Chicago. We had season tickets for Michael's entire career. So I have to acknowledge I'm probably a little bit biased, but I'm also one of the few people who's been able to see both these people live in person, mm-hmm. at an age where I could comprehend what was going on. And so as a result, you have to split hairs. You have to go like, okay, Michael had better finals across the board than LeBron did overall. And like, okay, that might have to be why you put him ahead. Ultimately, but it's a tough conversation. I mean, listen, one we won't have to shy away from, but certainly one that there is no clear-cut answer. I'm not going to go to the death arguing that Michael's better if someone else wants to come in LeBron. I do find it interesting how, like, praise of Michael tends to bring out LeBron people who get really upset about that and make sure they get their name, LeBron's name, in that conversation, which is a little bit weird because it's separated. It doesn't have to be all together and combined. But I don't know. Either way, interesting conversation there. I think, you know, let's get on the Ben Simmons thing. I did some preparation this morning about it, and I kind of wanted to talk about it, and I'll give you some ideas about what's going on. Obviously, if you haven't been paying attention, you've seen that there's been reports that Ben doesn't intend on reporting to training camp, much less wants to play for the Sixers anymore. He wants out. Supposedly, maybe he wants to go to California to play for one of those teams, which, hey, listen, the weather is great. And then three of the four teams are worth playing for. The Kings are probably the one, but I don't know if he minds. He might just want to get out so badly. We had talked about somebody had pitched last show where the offer could have been Halliburton and Buddy Hield. And I said, absolutely, if that's the deal, then the Sixers have to take that. Turns out, I think that's what they were asking. And the Kings were like, no way, which is good because I think it would have been probably too much for Ben Simmons, even though Simmons is a top, you know, fill in the blank, you know, top, geez, what is he? Top 20 player, you know, probably. We have a super chat. Thank you so much for this. This is how you get, if you're on YouTube side and you want to get my attention right away on the comments, this is the best way to do it. We have Orlando Sablon the third. Why are GMs bowing down to Rich Paul? I think that they're not, right? Because they haven't made the deal yet. I think, you know, although what other deals are we referring to then? Is there anything else I'm missing besides, wait, is Ben Simmons, isn't Ben Simmons under Rich Paul? Isn't that the whole thing? I will admittedly admit that that when it comes to like the age and stuff, I'm a little bit like sometimes I forget who's doing where and where. But if you remind me, I'll think it. But if it's Rich Paul, then, you know, it's clutch, right? And that's Ben Simmons. So I think that there's an example here where they're not necessarily making bad deals just to get, Ben Simmons on their team. Now, I feel like there's another deal that happened, though, with Rich Paul. But remind me maybe in the comments, and I'll see it.
Ben Simmons is signed to Clutch Sports.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that's Rich Paul, right?
Mm-hmm. And Tyrese Maxey,
right.
Too.
Right. And LeBron and everybody else, right? So, I think that here's an example. I was listening to Windhorse yesterday on his podcast, which is interesting. I don't listen to hardly any podcasts because I don't want to get influenced unduly by, like, other people's takes. But I do listen to his because I think it's pretty good. Or it's really good. And he was saying how Rich Paul, just an interesting tidbit I noticed that he said that thought was worth sharing. You know, you could go to the mat with Rich Paul if you're a GM and it could get really contentious. He won't hold that against you on the next one for the next player, which is not what happens usually in the NBA. And so that's an interesting take where, you know, teams don't need to be scared of him necessarily for doing, you know, negotiating tough with one player and then have to deal with him for another player. I feel like that's going to influence it. So that's good. I mean, that's how Rich Paul should approach all those anyway. So Dave Wu, thank you so much for another generous super chat. I thought of a name for your new defensive system, Shadow Defense, since the defense should be close behind the ball handler that he can't get rid of. Wow, Shadow. I like it. Because, you know, Chase Defense is what I've been calling it. And I don't know. It's not exactly grabbing me perfectly. So Shadow is interesting. I kind of like that. Dave, that's big. That's big. I'm going to make sure that I give you a shout-out right now. And then if it sticks, then Dave Wu. Dave, we're going to remember that name and have the help for that name. Great call on that one. So the Ben Simmons thing, let's talk about it. Oh, wow, another super chat. Wow, thank you so much, Dietrich Morgan. Patience is key in the situation. Absolutely. I mean, the Sixers don't need to – they have 4 years of him. And but here's what's interesting is they could show up in the beginning of the year and not play him. He doesn't play whatever and just figure they'll be okay. But I'm looking at that lineup, and I'm not that impressed with it. I don't know if Maxey, Danny Green, Tobias Harris, I'm missing somebody, and then Embiid. Who will be the fourth player in that starting lineup? They listed it the other day. I don't know how many games that wins. There's a lot of teams in the East that are much better now. We have to also look at the schedule and see who they're playing the first month because it might be an easy schedule. So that's the other issue there where I think that the Sixers might feel like, oh, we could be okay. I don't know. I don't get the greatest feeling about that lineup without Ben Simmons. But that's not even the point. The point with what their issue is on the Sixers side is obviously the playoffs. You could get great play out of Ben Simmons. You get that all-star play or what merits an all-star selection for Ben Simmons during the regular season. But for instance, I went through the game 7 and I'm prepping a video. I might actually just analyze game 7 in a really, like, really drill down and possession by possession, even into the fourth quarter, because that is a microcosm of the whole issue with Ben Simmons. So he makes a couple plays early in the fourth and it disappears completely for like 8 or 9 minutes. And when you watch what he's doing in these possessions, he is either just standing by the block and getting in the way of Embiid, who's now trying to like face up. And by the way, Embiid would still score. He jab step, shoot a free throw line jumper and score a couple times. But he's doing that because he sees the floor and like Gallinari is just standing there in the lane right next to Ben Simmons in the way. Like he would not, there's no lane for him to get in. He's setting a lot of screens and he's doing a lot of dribble handoffs. When I try to explain why what would make Ben Simmons better in the half court offense to make him more viable than just standing around like that is he should be the one catching the handoffs, turning into the lane with a strong left hand dribble, and then he can finish with the right or set up guys for threes. They don't do that at all. They have him relegated to basically what a big man would do in the 90s, or maybe even just a power forward in the 90s who didn't look to shoot at all. And he's playing by the block in the dunker spot. He's playing and setting pin downs. It's just bizarre because when you watch him involved in those actions, they sag off of him and get in the way of everybody else. And when they do score on some of those, I was going to share one earlier today where he does a handoff to Curry. And I think it's Collins is guarding Simmons. He just is so far off. Simmons doesn't care and can come up the entire works. Now, when they come back around, there's like another handoff, another screen or something. And then Curry ultimately does get like a floater and scores. But it's like the hardest shots you're getting, right? Because exactly why there's no Ben Simmons gravity at all. They don't care about him shooting at all outside of like 1 or 2 feet. And they don't need to worry about him even shooting it, much less making it, because he won't shoot it, much, you know, and much less miss. Of course, when you watch the game seven, you get down to the end there, he spin moves on in the post, is right at the basket, then he gets it up to Thibault, who gets fouled, and that was probably the last straw. We see that Ben Simmons was really upset with what Embiid had said and then what Doc had said after Game 7. I think that they probably would have been smart not to talk to the media. I think they would have gotten fined, but if they wanted to keep Simmons at all happy and or at least have the option of having him come back before they trade him, then they shouldn't have said anything. It's tough after a Game 7 loss like that where they had a lead, big leads in two of those games in a row and lost them in that whole series. So you got to be really concerned about, you know, what you say in those moments, in the heat of the moment. Doc, not as much, but I could see, like, it just sounds like Ben doesn't want to hear it from anybody. Doc was trying to get in on, like, you know, fixing his free throws. That will solve everything. I'm not sold on that. I see why maybe if he got better at free throws, he wouldn't just give the ball up so quickly, being worried of fouls. But from a practical standpoint and training standpoint, improving his free throw stroke isn't going to suddenly make his jump shot any better. That those are two separate sandboxes that don't necessarily play together. And that's a whole other round. We don't know. We've seen a couple clips that maybe Ben Simmons is shooting better or shooting, you know, a little bit. But we've seen that a lot in the past and it has not borne out at all. Gautam Kumar, thank you. Thank you so much. Why hasn't Dame asked for a trade yet, even after Portland's disappointing offseason? I think Dame is that kind of guy who simply doesn't want to get in that situation where he's a bad guy, especially in a place like Portland where that reveres him to the nth degree. I think the way he gets out is it has to be as quiet as possible so that they know that he's willing to do it and that the team is going to take the hit on this one and trade him. I think that Portland would have an uprising. Now, if they get someone like Ben Simmons, I suppose that helps, but it seems to me that if there was going to be a trade, then CJ would probably be the guy that they would give up for that one. And I think CJ would be awesome in Philly alongside those guys, letting him run the show a little bit. And then, by the way, letting Curry just get more. Curry is really good. Curry deserves to start probably. You know, I think his size and maybe just being Curry, Steph's brother, for some reason doesn't give him the kind of run that he deserves. And the NBA sleeps on those kind of guys all the time. Look at what Dallas did. They let him go when they could have kept him, thinking they needed a bigger player like in Josh Richardson. Total nightmare. And then meanwhile, you got Curry playing deep into the playoffs and the Dallas Mavericks are knocked out in the first round. You know, you're watching Curry on TV that whole time. So that's a big, interesting question for them. And for the NBA itself, why they like to like forget about these 6'1" guards, who can do a lot of damage. Wesley Stone, thank you so much for the super chat on the YouTube side. What seed will the Sixers be minus Ben Simmons next season? That's a great question. Well, obviously we don't know if it's minus Ben Simmons, but plus Dame, right? Then they're the number 2 seed, right? They could be over maybe even, you know, the Bucks. I would say that the Nets are going to be number 1 anyway, but, the Sixers become a lot more relevant, and they're simply not relevant right now. I feel like there's a bunch of teams here where, you know, even if Milwaukee, Philly, you know, how far the Celtics have fallen until they can prove that they haven't done much in the offseason. I don't know what's going to happen there, but I don't think it's going to be great. Who else are we talking about? The Hawks. Hawks are going to be terrific. They're going to get DeAndre Hunter back healthy. That's going to be huge for them. Let's see here. There's another move they might have made that I'm forgetting of the Hawks. Maybe someone will tell me in the comments. So the Hawks are going to be, I think, very viable coming off of that really important experience they got in the playoffs. So, you know, we can't forget about maybe Indiana with Rick Carlisle coming in there with a new culture. That could be have a severely positive effect on them, too. And it certainly make them just good. They're a good team, and they could be a lot better now. So those are the teams, you know, that are going to get left out here. Philly could be really disappointed if they don't quite make a good deal. And I'm not sure even if they keep Simmons. I guess what the point is when the locker room gets toxic like it is, then you just got to get rid of him. You have to trade him. I have been saying this. If you were following me and listening to me, I've been saying this for maybe over two years that this pairing wasn't going to work. Why wait? And they did. And here they are. And now not only did they wait, Heartbreak City with the Game 7 loss due to a lot of the Simmons issues that he has. And then now he's upset and complaining, and now they don't have a lot of, you know, it's harder to have leverage to make a good trade and get value back in the situation. It's weird because usually you don't have a team that has 4 years left on the guy's contract demanding to get out like that. That's a strange situation for them for sure. Wow, more super chats. Thank you, thank you, thank you. This is a great Sunday. Happy Sunday to everybody. Cody Copeland says, what are your thoughts on Scotty Barnes, number one four pick? Okay, so Scotty Barnes is Florida State, I believe, which is ACC. Am I correct? And when I'm saying that, I looked at that the other day. I'm going to do a deep dive on him because I'm doing a series with the ACC where I have access to all crazy, crazy good footage of them. So he will be my next guy. I think I looked at a couple clips of him the other day and was like, I don't know. People are high on him, and it wasn't grabbing me right away. But I'm going to do a deep dive. So stay tuned probably this week. I should be able to get to it later in the week and do a nice Scotty Barnes episode. So stay tuned. So, Cody, don't miss that for sure. Thank you. Mark Mean, thank you, thank you. Can we trade Green one for one? Steph is already alpha. Can we trade Green one for one? What does that mean, though? Can't we trade Green? Green being Danny Green? No. Or is it Draymond Green? No. Who are we talking about? Steph is already alpha. Which Green? Is there another? Wait, who's the other Green that's on the – are we talking about the Warriors? Damn. Mark, come back to me. Maybe in the regular chat I'll scroll down here. Draymond for Simmons. Oh, I see what you're saying. Draymond, can we trade Draymond for Simmons? No, they would never do that, right? They would need something more. They would need Draymond and – you know, probably a guard. I mean, not that they'd say Draymond and Wiggins, maybe. Like, they would need something like that. But I don't think that the Warriors want to trade Draymond, even though he's a handful. And, we, you know, they did catch Kerr mouthing the words of what he felt about him at some point a couple of years ago. And I know Coach Kerr was able to come up with an interesting explanation for what he really said, but I think it was pretty clear. But even still, and that's the other thing, is the Warriors fans were getting really excited about maybe getting Simmons. And I was like posing, well, imagine a starting lineup with Looney, Simmons, and Draymond in there. I don't care if Clay is 100,000% healthy. It doesn't seem optimal for them how they want to run it. Now, you know, maybe you play that lineup 10 minutes a game and you go to small ball really quickly and you stay that way for most of the game. You know, maybe that works, but I'm not that high on it. Although people were sort of saying, well, you know, because Simmons is basically Draymond. So, okay, that is the point. You know, as far as Draymond and Simmons, like, okay, just get rid of Draymond and you get the defense similarly that Draymond brings. But it's not really similar. What Draymond does as a quarterback off ball, directing the defense, is something that Ben Simmons definitely does not do. It's not even close. So that's going to be the issue. From a Philly standpoint, though, yeah, I mean, if they wanted Draymond, like, why would they want Draymond? They're already dealing with a guy who can't shoot and doesn't spread the floor like that. You know, I mean, unless they got something, you know, back, like another really good player, but then the salaries won't match up, because I know Draymond's getting paid a lot of money too. So I don't think it works. I think that the package you're talking about is like Wiseman and Wiggins, because Wiseman's on a rookie contract, so his contract's a lot smaller. I would hate to see the Warriors give up Wiseman. I think he's going to be an all-star eventually. And I know they don't have any time to lose because Steph is getting older, and that makes sense. They have to sort of you know, go for broke, but it would be great for the Warriors to figure out a way where they can maybe upgrade in the margins Wiggins or something, but keep Wiseman. I would like to see that happen. So thoughts on the Knicks draft picks, Grimes, McBride, and Rokas, Steelers or reaches? Gosh darn it all. I haven't, you know, I've still been remiss. I haven't done a deep enough dive on all those guys. But, you know, I was talking to my buddy Adam Stanko, who's the resident expert on all the draft stuff. And he was saying, he's like, we got to do something. We didn't do it then because it was a weird time and whatever. But so I apologize. I can't give you any I'm not going to BS and make up some things from a random post I saw about any of those three guys. But I will do, I think we'll do some sort of live show and we'll focus on a lot of these players. Or maybe we'll just do an edited show and I'll get clips and stuff like that. So, you know, keep your eyes open for that. I do want to do something, or maybe if they start playing well, then I'll try and do a spotlight on them, because, you know, the Knicks deserve, you know, some love. Although I just did the Knicks, video. Guys, go out and watch the Knicks video. I feel like it wasn't actually, I think it was catching up, but let me look here real quick. The Knicks video I just dropped, go watch it. It's pretty good. Yeah, it's doing okay. It's a weird time, right? Where everyone wants to watch baseball and now football's coming back in. Ugh. But anyway, don't forget, if you're out there on the YouTube side and you want to chop it up, come on the show on the Green Room app. I want to hear from you guys. You don't need to hear me talk for an hour straight, do you? I don't need to. And then you'll also be, you know, I'll post this as a podcast as well, which gets listened to a lot, believe it or not, even still. All right, Caps Lock caught my eye. Good for you in the YouTube chat. Ben Simmons for Shea Alexander. I can't believe they'd ever consider trading Shea Gilgeous. He's too good. He's on a good track. He's on a good contract, you know, and he can actually shoot a little bit from the outside and create. I wouldn't do that. I mean, that's the problem, is Ben Simmons' value. What is his real value? I think a lot of it ends up being in the regular season when he can dominate and overpower people in the full court. And then, you know, offensively, you can kind of get away with some stuff with that, where once they get into the playoffs and they isolate him or they ignore him more as a concentrated defensive concept, it just makes it so much harder on Philly, which is why just anybody else that can spread the floor, like you can replace Ben Simmons the way they run their offense with like PJ Tucker, you know, that kind of a guy. And they probably would be better, even though obviously PJ Tucker is not nearly as good as Ben Simmons. And I was reading, like, was it Stephen A or someone was like, he's like, you know, it's Ben Simmons' fault. He just needs to shoot. He just needs to be able to start shooting, like as if you just snap your fingers and you do that. But it really requires a specific kind of training. I mean, listen, you could discuss which hand he should be shooting with all day long. I can't. I mean, at this point, if you want, you know, I know Tristan Thompson did it with free throws, but if you want to switch hands on a jumper, I don't know. That would be as unprecedented as I can imagine. And I could see why he'd be reluctant to do that. But you can almost argue that he just simply needs to shoot with that left hand from the outside. Just make it be a little bit of a threat. Make it be something that they think about. You know, he'll probably make a few of those, and then that would be the difference. But he won't even shoot them, and then the free throw thing. So it really makes him unviable in the playoffs. And that's the name of the game for Philly, because obviously they want to win a championship. Okay, we have another super chat. Thank you so much, Anthony. Wow, a lot of very diverse group of people out here. Anthony Villamil, thank you. If Kawhi doesn't make that shot in 19, Philly probably wins the title. They can win with Ben. You're sleeping on Miami, healthy depot. Oh, I am sleeping on Miami as well, absolutely. And we have a couple of people want to jump into the chat over on Green Room. So we'll get to you guys in the Green Room in a second, but let me just finish that thought. You're absolutely right. If Philly, okay, who would Philly have beaten in 19? They would have beaten I mean, we don't know if like KD goes down. Obviously, Philly, I don't think Philly beats the Warriors if KD stays healthy. But if that still played out, then yeah, at the very least, they get to the NBA Finals, which is another, you know, telling thing. Because now, was that, remind me, was that, was the Raptors and Sixers, that was the conference semifinals, right? The second round? Or was that the finals, right? I can't remember now. I think that was the second round, right? Someone can remind me of that. What's that?
Second round.
Second round, right. So, you know, Philly would have still had to get by Toronto. Now I'm going crazy. Toronto beats Philly. If Philly beats Toronto, they have to get by who in the conference finals?
The Bucks. They would have beaten the Bucks then.
They probably would have beaten the Bucks. Yeah, so I that's a good point that they can win. Like in, you know, getting the finals probably is a thing. You know what? It might be worth even going back and watching that specific series to figure out how they even got that far. You know what I mean? Why were they viable so much with Ben Simmons out there? What was Philly or what was Toronto not doing? Right, that they did like a couple of years later, that other teams were, that made it so hard. Any thoughts up there on the Green Room side?
Jimmy Butler was a big factor that year. He was a perimeter threat that they just don't have anymore. I mean, I'm a big Jimmy Butler fan. I feel like if he's your second best player and you have a legit
Yeah, that's a good point. Jimmy Butler was there, and that mitigated some things. Defense. You know, who was a different kind of player than like Seth Curry, who they had later last year. But you also got, you know, the defense of Jimmy Butler too. That's interesting. Okay, that's a good call. Good call. Anybody else? All right. Well, jump in here and somebody tell me what you want to talk about. We got a lot of people in the room now.
Man, so Coach, I got a crazy suggestion. I don't think anybody has mentioned yet for a team for Ben Simmons, right?
Okay.
The Denver Nuggets.
Ooh. No one's mentioned that. Nobody. For who?
It's because Aaron Gordon. No, because they tried that with Aaron Gordon. I don't know if that's going to work.
Right. Well, you see, yeah, because you're thinking Aaron Gordon and Ben Simmons in the same team. That's interesting. But it's the same thing as like Draymond and Ben Simmons together. But who would you trade for? Who would Denver give up?
I would trade Jamal Murray.
No.
Wow.
You do not trade Jamal Murray for Ben Simmons.
You cannot trade Jamal Murray. No.
Yeah, I that's a weird one. I mean, why would you want to trade Jamal Murray? Is like because he's injured a lot now and or something like that?
So,
or what?
My thing is, and maybe it's because I'm really high on Michael.
Can I say why the Warriors make the most sense?
Yeah, go ahead. Well, we'll finish the Denver thing real quick because I want to hear what that thought.
No, I would say because I'm really high on Michael Porter Jr. and I'm also really high on Monte Morris. I feel like you can get that same production from those two, but I feel like Ben Simmons with Nikola Jokic is a much different big man than Joel Embiid. Like all that handoff action you talk about, all the awful movement, like Ben Simmons would thrive, I believe, next to Jokic. And he would give them that defensive presence that they don't have virtually.
You know, that's interesting because, yeah, because now, you know, Jokic, and we kind of saw that with Aaron Gordon, right? Like there's a similar thing, yeah. Although Aaron Gordon doesn't have the ball, doesn't facilitate that way, but the passing, the cutting and stuff could be there too. I don't know. I just feel like the league is looking for shooters. They're looking to spread the floor, not make it smaller. And I just don't see in the half court in the fourth quarter of a playoff game how you play him. Now, maybe you don't play him. Maybe that's the solution. But like you're paying the guy a lot of money, and you can't. Right? That's the other problem. He's a conundrum. He's stuck. You know, not like he's a Kenneth Faried or anything like that who got stuck on his way to being like a really great player, right? And then the league just changed overnight, and then everyone just gave up on him right away, right? Which is kind of sad because I still feel like he could have been viable as a player. But I just don't know. I mean, okay, Jokic, you know, you look at that lineup. Simmons, Jokic, Gordon, Porter Jr.,
really good.
Will Barton.
Phoenix get him? If Phoenix turn some of those no-name wings they got that caused them to lose the finals into Ben Simmons, could they then have won?
What no-name?
I'm just asking. They got defending them by name, Cameron, like Bridges or Cameron John. Yeah, like if you like if they were just like okay, but they weren't good enough. Hold on. Ben Simmons is at his best when he's doing a Blake Griffin impression, pick and roll, short roll, dunking, kicking it out. You know, but like all that other stuff that they try to make him do, that's when he fails. So. Just right. Have him be Lob City 3.0 or whatever you want to call it in Phoenix with Chris Paul and Devin Booker and have Ayton sit in the dunker spot like DeAndre and, you know, right. Work with that.
Well, but the problem here is
I think that works.
Philly makes it clear they want, like, a starting quality player and I think a guard.
Yeah,
and they want, like, a number one pick. And probably another player, right? They want the equivalent of a top 10 player's value. So, right, good luck. And until they let go of that, which, you know, to go from that to then Bridges and Cameron Johnson, who I love. I love both those
guys. But those guys can
them.
Shoot, and you didn't have any shooting around Embiid, but those guys can actually shoot.
Yeah, you're just talking about to go from there to there. It would take a long time for them to even
because Philly's not going to move him to the Warriors for Draymond because Draymond's going to be the same damn problem, and he's older. Like that's the thing. Like you need something at least viable back that you can put together. If you can't get, you know, sometimes two nickels make a dime. You know?
Right. Well, no, but that's no. I don't think the deal would be Draymond. I think it would be Wiseman, and Wiggins, and a pick. Right. That's what they would want. And the Warriors, you know, the Warriors Wiseman? Could do that if they felt they would it would move the needle more. But I think like Beal is the kind of guy. If Clay was healthy and they could play him at the three, which they certainly could, I'd like bringing a guy like Beal. You know, that would be insane. You know, Beal and Steph and Clay. And then you throw, you know, whoever and Draymond next to them. That's a tough team.
How do they afford that?
What's that?
How do they afford that kind of?
How do they afford that? That's a good question. Well, Wiggins' huge salary is similar to Beal's, I think. Yeah. Am I crazy?
I think it's a bit less, but yeah, like you're in.
Yeah, there's a lot of big salaries.
Yeah, so that might actually work. I mean, listen, Wiggins works for me too, alongside if Clay is healthy.
Wiggins is good.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, he's really good if he's like the fourth guy, not the third or the second, right? And so that's what would happen once Clay gets healthy. But we don't know. I mean, we saw Clay moving around. But
is he a third though? If he plays in the Warriors, he's still a second option to me ahead of Clay Thompson.
Not if it's Clay out there, option. Right?
Because I know I still think
nah, he's a third option
because he's a worse player. But at the end of the day, he's still going to have more usage, and he might take more shots
than who?
Than Clay.
No.
Clay's coming off from an injury.
Nah.
Oh, well, no, okay, fine.
No.
If Clay that team is healthy, that's what I'm saying.
They might ease Clay.
He would lead them in assists, but he would not lead them in shots.
Like, would you not be surprised if next year, for some reason, Clay averages 15, 16, and Wiggins averages 18, 19?
So he might do that.
All right. I mean, only if Clay is like a shell of himself, which, you know, all right, that would be possible. But if he's healthy, I couldn't picture Clay not being the second leading scorer.
He's not going to be completely healthy, though. You can't miss two seconds to come back as if nothing happened.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's reasonable.
I could easily see Wiggins being the second leading scorer in the regular season because Clay's coming back.
Wiggins scores more than Clay, if you want to put it that way, just in general. He scores more.
Is this our way of fading the Warriors? Are we just fading the Warriors right
Wiggins
now?
Wiggins always on teams where he's taking a lot of-
Yeah, no, that's true, too. I mean, I think that's the problem is the Warriors just don't know what they have because they don't know what Clay is like. If Clay is healthy and he can move well, then they're a top team. And if not, although, again, I'm sure it's gnawing at them. Wiggins is an interesting question. Not like Ben Simmons, but there's a similarity there as far as what can we get out of him and how much can we rely on him, especially down, you know, in deep in the playoffs. That's the thing that kind of sucked. I think they would have really loved to have gotten into the playoffs because they certainly just wanted to see how Wiggins would react. As far as I'm concerned, he's never played in the playoffs. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Wiggins, we've never seen him in the playoffs and what that would be like. Did they make it once with Tibbs or something?
No, Minnesota.
Yeah, 2018.
Minnesota.
Once? All right, let's look at that because now it's worth seeing.
When Jimmy Buckets won them that playing game, right? Didn't that what happened? Or did Denver
win the playing game back then?
No playing game.
No, I think they got in normal.
No. It was like a record thing. It was a record thing. It was literally the last game of the season.
Denver,
it was
because of a record.
It is. It was, 2018. They lost in the first round. Let's go look at his stats from that year, shall we? Just because I'm kind of curious. Wait, 2018 playoffs? Is that what I just said?
Yeah.
Traditional.
Man, none of them. Nobody played well.
2017-18 playoffs.
Except Jimmy Buckets. Minnesota.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jimmy didn't even play well in that playoff.
Nah, Jimmy Buckets was the only one.
So Wiggins averaged 15.8 points. Here it is, 15.8 points. Him and Jimmy were tied for the team lead in points per game. Wiggins shot 44.1% from the field, 33.3% from three, two assists a game. Like, yeah, he did not play well at all as far as box score production, 5-5-6. Karl-Anthony Towns was, you know, actually – interesting enough, he shot well. He only scored 50 in a game himself, but he shot 47% from the field, but only 27 from three. But he grabbed a ton of boards. There were probably a ton of boards to grab. Wait, so who's that? Who did they play against in that round, in the first round?
Houston.
Oh, Houston. Shoot. You know, yeah, that was – okay, Houston. Yeah,
oh,
right. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say. The one seed.
Yeah, so that they lost to Houston. Right. So that's an interesting and, you know, it doesn't really tell you much, and I think the Warriors are really concerned about that, which is why they'd much rather bring somebody else in, the next level of Wiggins. But, again, this is all weird because And anybody who makes – well, why would the Bucks ever do that? Middleton's their best player. Oh,
no, I mean, he's the Bucks would never get rid of Chris Middleton.
Middleton is not their best player. He is their most important fourth quarter scoring person. Right?
They would make
the only reliable
though.
Shooter they got, right?
Yeah, and Middleton is probably like their best defender, or second best, whatever.
And he just won a title. You can't really trade him right now.
Yeah, you can't afford to trade him anyway. But
trade him and it doesn't work, the backlash you're going to get for that.
Exactly. Well, by the way, if you can imagine the backlash that Milwaukee would give to the team for trading Middleton, you can imagine that it's 10 times that for Dame. Even if Dame doesn't say anything, and then you know, they trade him, even though it doesn't seem like he demanded the trade, even though he might have, it'll still be a backlash. Because, you know, sometimes certain – I mean, I feel like in the past we've seen a couple teams where they've been able to trade a really popular player, but they're like, you know what, he gave us a lot of his career, he played as hard as he could, and we wish him well. Like, I don't know if that's going to happen at all if Dame gets traded, no matter what – however he, you know, portrays himself in this situation. You know what I mean? I think it's going to be tough. I mean, it would have to be like LeBron – like that. They'd have to get such a great player back for them to even, like, consider not rioting. Anybody out there from Portland who wants to weigh in on this one?
I think Dame's a great actor, though.
He's a great actor?
Good actor, yeah. I think he could easily make it he can easily change the narrative if he wants to. I think that's the kind of person he is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, I think he's probably happy in Portland. He's got the run of the place, and he, you know, the team has been very competitive when he's been there. You know, but I guess the question is, you get to some certain point in your career, it's what, 10 years in now, where, you know, he's not smelling the finals, and he wants to get there. But I like what they did. I mean, picking up Larry Nance is going to be big for them. I don't know if it moves the needle, obviously, to get them in the top, you know, four, but
Kevin O'Connor from the Ringer is huge on Larry Nance. He thinks,
yeah, and Kevin's a smart guy, so, you know, Nance can shoot the three now. He's a terrific defender, makes a lot of plays on that end. He's really low-key that you don't notice. When he was with the Lakers, I was watching a lot there, and he would just make play after play, and you know, even it's deflections or just getting the right position to take away a cut. That's going to really help because their offense isn't going to be the issue, right, with the Blazers. They're going to be able to score a lot of points. It's always been their defense, and, you know, he helps that. You know, Covington makes sure that they're, you know, is a good defender as well. They're putting some pieces together, and they've always surprised. And if you want to bet against them, you know, at your own peril, then there they are in the second round, or they make the conference finals. You know, they made it. I think they made it twice with Dame, right?
I only remember once personally.
Only once. All right, like I can check real quick, but I feel like it was twice. Let's see here. If I go back here, and I go Trailblazers, where are you? Portland.
I think it's a wonderful place. The Golden State, and they got smoked.
I see one conference final. So here's Dame. Second round, first round, second round, first round, first round, conference finals, first round, first round. Okay, so only one. All right, we have another super chat that wants to come in here. A little bit off topic. Thank you so much, Zachariah Dossi. Thank you. A bit off topic, but given his last performance, do you think Giannis will be the best player in the league next season? No. Well, I mean, if you want to take the last performance being the last game where he's making all his free throws, right, that does shift a little bit where all of a sudden now he's not. Remember, I think am I correct in my mind's eye? Like, he got rid of the ball a couple of times in the fourth quarter of one of the games before the last game, scared to, you know, didn't want to shoot the free throws. So if that changes and he starts to make 75% of his free throws, that does change the calculus a little bit. I mean, he's going to be top three, right? He's got to be top three, KD, him, and I don't know for LeBron. LeBron probably won't be the way this is going to happen. They're going to load manage and stuff. So who would be the third then? Steph? Okay. Steph, there's probably somebody else we're forgetting. Like, is it Kawhi or something like that? Kawhi is out.
I don't even think Kawhi is really
Luka Doncic.
Yeah, he won't play. Luka could be in there. But you know, if we're going to compare Luka to Giannis, like, yeah, you could say Giannis is you can put him above there. So I think if the free throw thing gets worked out, then I would feel a lot more comfortable saying definitely, like, yeah, he's 1-2 or, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 tops. I mean, you know, no lower than that. If the free throw thing becomes an issue still and they're ignoring him, whatever, then I have a hard time because it's like, how can you be the top player in the league? How can you be the top three player when you never get a call for a play in the fourth quarter or the end of the game? right? Because they're going to follow you. Like, that doesn't work for me. And by the way, it's the Shaq issue, too. It's like, how can Shaq be considered an MVP when he'll never get a last play call for him, ever? He never did, really, right? Because they were going to follow him. They put him on the line. So that's an issue with me where it's like you need to be able to be good enough in that situation then to get the rest of this stuff. No matter, I know you're dominant. I know you can do a lot of stuff. But at some point, it's where it matters in the end of the games. What's up next? We have a couple comments here in the green room. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Coach. I'm sorry if someone asked this before, but in your opinion, let's say you're Ben Simmons' personal trainer. Where do you see, like, assuming he does not get marginally better at shooting, maybe he starts attempting, like, three more mid-range shots a game, where do you really see him in a role in an offense? Do you see him as a Draymond better, or...
I mean, the way I see that he could be much better, I mean, by the way, someone said he sets up more three-point shots than anybody else. I don't know if I've seen where that is. It might be true, which, by the way, again, he's very viable. But my mind is you have to get him away from standing near the block because his man just gets in the way of everything else. What we've learned in the last 10 years in the NBA is the spacing is really important. And by making it easy on the defense that way, then it bogs everything down and makes it harder. Not like you can't score, but it makes those percentages harder to keep up.
Even if he's on the wing, isn't his defender going to cheat off him like heavily?
He will. Well, that's an interesting question.
Wayne Wade cut, backdoor cut thing.
Right. Okay. So the difference between spacing on a player who doesn't shoot and a player who does is probably like a step or step and a half. I don't really think it's that much real estate, but it matters in the context of getting a catch and shoot when you can get open for an extra quarter of a second. That matters. But in real estate terms, I really don't think it ends up being a whole hell of a lot. I mean, okay, it would probably be pretty extreme on the margins with guys like Draymond and then Simmons, where if Draymond's above the three-point line, his man can't be in the lane. Or, I mean, he can be for like the 2.9 seconds, but they'll dance around there, and then they'll wait for you to step right out and land and boom, and attack. So the best way for me to see Ben Simmons dealing with it, because, you know, on the modern NBA offenses, they let him bring the ball up. But most of that role, if you're bringing the ball up, you're going to make a pass, and you might not see the ball back again. And that's what allows him to then hand off or whatever and then go wander down to the low post, right? You need to keep him engaged where he's spread and then coming off of handoffs. Now, there's a lot of other – I'm sure – by the way, I did see like ball screens in the post, which is really good, viable for him too. But the thing that keeps getting stuck on for me is he needs to be on the right side of the floor, and you need to do the handoffs to him. So he's catching it and turning it into the middle. That should be the majority of the possessions he gets in the half court. And then obviously in the full court, you're letting him go free and go crazy, which is really another viable opportunity for him. So if you don't do the handoffs to him around the wing area so he can break down the defense going strong to the hoop, then I don't know what you're doing. And they don't do it enough, if at all.
Well, I think that he was – I mean, I don't like Ben Simmons, obviously, because like the three-point shooting problem. But I do think that he was in probably the worst elite team for his skills between Tobias Harris and Joel Embiid. Most elite teams do not have those type of scores. Most teams have wing scores.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that his weaknesses were overly watched on national television, and he might be a lot more viable in a regular offense than we think.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I'm willing to go with that. Okay, so let's now open our minds.
Joel Embiid is the only elite post scorer in the league, probably. Meaning that's purely the post. Maybe Devonta Sabonis. I'm saying Jokic stands outside, all these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, by the way, Embiid gets outside a little bit too. Let's give him, you know, props for that or whatever. But I hear you. He's probably the most, like, physically aggressive guy down there. I mean, Jokic does it too, but in a different way. Listen, Tobias Harris is a wing scorer. Right? I mean, let's see. How many threes is he taking these days? Is he not taking a lot?
He probably does take more. It's probably not what he's most comfortable with. He's probably more comfortable with that old school.
Yeah, pull up. Let's see. Tobias Harris took a little over three a game out of his 15 attempts, which is, you know, a low frequency for a guy to be considered, a wing or an outside scorer. And there's no question we know that Tobias loves to get in the mid-range and pull and get to the hoop. So, you know what? It's an interesting point. I mean, obviously, to me, Ben Simmons is a center. Let him play center on defense, and then let him have four guys who are going to spread to the ultimate degree around him, and almost like in that Giannis way. Like, that's probably what Ben Simmons should be. And instead, you're right, he's got Embiid alongside him. He's got Harris alongside him. You know, it helps to have Seth Curry there, and then they have a couple other guys who can shoot. But then, you know, when they threw out you'd have Embiid, you have Thibault alongside him, right? And then that becomes a problem. I don't think that Danny Green shot well in the playoffs, if my recollection is correct.
I don't think he's so scared of Thibault either.
What's that?
I don't think they're so scared of Thibault either. I don't think he helps so much when he – whatever. I think he's a great defender.
No, he's not at all. I mean, they're going to ignore him completely. So that's a good point. And by the way, Russ – you could argue that Russ has the same issues too. When he would not get the proper spacing alongside like Robertson and some other guys, he played much better when they can get it spread, like even with alongside of James Harden. So, yeah, I think that you're right. I think there are some versions of the Matrix where Simmons wouldn't be in a situation where he is now, where they're like, he's not viable in the Sixers and we can't play him in the playoffs. So yeah, but that's my mind's eye. I think he should play center and force the other team to have to match up with him and go really, really small. Because is he going to get bullied by Embiid if he's guarding Embiid? Like maybe, but maybe not. Simmons is really strong.
The best scoring center.
Embiid, I don't know about he's going to bully every center in the league.
Yeah, I don't think Simmons. The fact that
he's
more of like a 1-4 guy that can guard some of the less effective post fives in the post.
Right. I just think that Simmons needs to be on a team and needs to play the most of his minutes where he's the only non-shooter on the floor, right? Like, if they can figure that out, then – and by the way, Philly could – you know, it would be nice if they could figure that out too, but they can't because obviously Embiid's going to be alongside him. And so the most you're going to have is three. And, you know, and by the way, I love Thibault. He deserves to play too. But if they're going to do that, then that's always going to be the problem. So
well, I think he shot well in the Olympics.
Where can he go? Did Thibault shoot well in the Olympics? He did?
I think he did.
I know I saw him make a few, and it looks okay. I've always been amazed that Thibault can play 4 years in college and come out so unpolished on offense. I don't know what the deal is there or what they were doing up there, but they let him down. There's no question. A four-year player at a college should be much more polished than he is. And I love him. And I think he's a better defender than Ben Simmons is. But, it's just strange to me. His offense, it looks to me like he didn't play college at all. You know, he should be much better. So, another super chat. Thank you. Thank you so much from Tunde Pizzle. Thank you. Isn't Harden better player than Greek Freak and Luka? Oh, you know, so here's the thing about Harden that we ignored him when we're talking about the top three players is, like Harden, if they're all healthy in Brooklyn, like he's going to win the MVP, right? Like, I think he's going to end up averaging a triple double and looking amazing because that's the best version we're going to get of him, where he's not doing all those ISO multi dribble pull ups ISOs. He's doing he's facilitating and then scoring when they need him to, and he can do that because he is so good. Honestly, I do feel like what I had seen in those little evidence we got of everybody healthy, that Harden was the man. He's the MVP of the league playing alongside those guys. So, yeah. So as a result, maybe we need to put Harden in the top three as well. And then that bumps down. Right. That will bump down Giannis too. Harden could conceivably be the number one player in the league this year.
Yeah, I really do. Man.
And he might play some defense because of his role on the offense is be a little bit lessened because of that. So watch for that. Hot take.
Yeah, I don't think he's the man on that Nets team, but I definitely believe this is the best version of Harden because, as you said, they don't live and die with those high pick-and-roll ISOs or just, you know, his ISOs in general where he gets fatigued. Mm-hmm. And then he could play a bit more defense just because he has that energy to exert. Because you see, during the playoffs, I think the whole Harden's a choker thing is more of a he can't at the end of those games – he just doesn't have the energy to go at the teams because he has to create all the advantages. You know, he didn't really have outside of CP3 and Russ when Russ was healthy. He didn't have that second person that could help him run the offense. He had to create for Eric Gordon. He had to create for Trevor Ariza. He had to set up Capella for those lobs, you know.
Absolutely. And that's not a hot take. I think everybody recognized that the issues he had in Houston in the playoffs were all related to, like, just fatigue. Like, he just got worn down. And it's funny because the Rockets looked at it analytically and said, okay, the best type of shot we're going to get is something generated from James Harden. Like, that clearly is what the numbers tell us. So that's what we're going to do without necessarily factoring that in, that, like, A, it can wear you out over the course of a whole season, and then B, when you get to the second round of the playoffs – the defenders you're going up against are really good and are even more focused than they would have been in the regular season. And so all of a sudden, whatever that you're trying to generate that you've built over the course of an 82-game season isn't going to work very well at all, and you're going to miss 27 threes in a row. Like, all those kind of things happen based on that. So that's why they probably learned the lesson that you can't really, you know, wear somebody out like that. Michael Jordan learned that as well. And so not only did they bring a couple better players in to help him offensively, but the system they ran in the triangle also was able to better balance the floor and make it more difficult for the defense to load up on him. And then it created easier shots for everybody else. Remember, offenses like that aren't for the stars. It's for the role players who will let you down if you don't give them an offense that will where they know the shots are coming and they have rhythm and then the catches, and it's not just sort of stilted and you're standing in the corner for five straight possessions, then you finally in the sixth one touch the ball. That's we've known that for a long time, and I think that the Rockets got a painful lesson in that one. So another super chat, thank you so much on the YouTube side. Nickname Tooncat. All right, thank you, Ben. And this is all caps, by the way. Ben Simmons is Lamar Odom without a jumper. Yeah, okay, I can see that. I mean, Simmons is even more explosive as an athlete than Lamar was, but Lamar was what made it unfair for the Lakers because he was a guard at 7 feet, and he would handle the ball, he'd initiate the offense, he'd fill in like almost like a Scottie Pippen role, and it was unfair for the other teams because then he could play defense too and be that big. So that was underrated advantage the Lakers had all those years with Lamar. Okay, we have another speaker coming in here, and what's up? What else are we going to talk about so far as we're going through here? Anyone else want to jump in here?
Coach, something? Can I just mention something quickly?
Yeah.
Someone mentioned the Ben Simmons for Jamal Murray. I don't actually think that's going to happen on a practical level. Being said, if I'm Denver, Denver's front office, let's say, I'm not exactly so happy with what they did. I think they're just stuck in that second tier playoff team, along with probably Miami now, although Miami got a lot better. But I do think that Denver has to do something. I thought they'd make a move at Kyle Lowry. But
they didn't do anything, right?
Can I jump
in? I thought they'd make a move at DeMar DeRozan. Like, I think they really do need another score ball handler. I don't know what MPJ is going to look like.
All right, can I jump in there? Yeah. I don't understand why you're saying they need a healthy Jamal Murray. If they had a healthy Jamal Murray, they would have been like a top three team in the NBA. So I don't know. I don't know what move they could have done, other than getting a healthy Jamal Murray back to like actually be.
Right, I'm not sure. I'm not sure of their cap situation.
Yeah,
they're going to have to go into the tax. I mean, if you want to win a championship, you're going to have to go into the tax. If their owner flakes out and doesn't re-sign the MPJ and Aaron Gordon, then they might as well just blow it up because that's their best chance at winning a championship. They're going to get in the next 10.
Right. So think the current roster is good enough to win a championship? I'm just curious.
I think it's top three, and it depends on how it breaks.
By the way, I'm forgetting now. You know, Jamal Murray tore his ACL on April 12th, so he's not coming back.
Yeah, he's basically missing this whole year. So they're basically this year is like a gap year.
Okay, he'll be the punting on the year.
Yeah, so they're going to be screwed. And, you know, they brought back Austin Rivers. You know, he's one of those guys, too, who I think he puts a ceiling on your team. And they were relying on that guy.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're not paying him much. So they just brought him back because he was basically all they could have got.
Right. I mean, and that's fine. Minimum contract's fine. But, like, that's the problem. They got Will Barton back and Jermichael Green. And actually, having Paul Millsap go away is not bad. I think he's kind of washed. He just went somewhere. Who just picked him up?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Yeah, by the way, now that's not the worst either. He might be okay in like, 15 minutes a game there. But he looked washed to me at all completely, and I don't know if he's got much left in the tank. But Brooklyn, they're already so good. It's so funny. Are Lakers fans excited about DeAndre Jordan?
No.
Okay. I wouldn't think so, but
I don't see what he brings to that team. They have the Dwight Howard as that rim protector for when AD's out, and I don't see what role he's going to play with Dwight.
I think they're going to split the center, do center by committee with Howard and
right.
I don't think they would DeAndre Jordan's going to play unless somebody's hurt, because I think it's going to be they're going to have to play AD at the five a lot, and I think when he's not at the five, Dwight Howard.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm saying well, just an insurance policy at that point. Then
yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and by the way, they got a lot of run out of using JaVale and Dwight when they won the title together. So they're probably trying to recreate that. I mean, they missed
Russ. With Russ now, they're going to have to play AD at the five. I mean, Russ.
Yeah, they're going to need that optimal spacing, and the only way to get that is with AD at the five, and AD's better at the five than the four anyway. I feel like at the five, he's definitely a top 3-4 player. At the four, where he can't utilize his defensive greatness to the extent that he does, and he's not exactly in that position where he could impact the game as much as he's capable of, he's like a top 6-7-ish player.
Okay.
I think defensively, he actually is just as good at the four. It's offensively, I think it's just the offense opens up when he's at.
It's weird because what does it even mean to be at the five?
It means, is he playing with another center? That's really what.
Right. Right. Because he's going to play the same way on offense, right? So if you had Dwight next to him versus, somebody smaller, then it changes the spacing of the floor, but it doesn't change what AD does, right? I feel like. I mean, unless you want to show me some stats, which could be interesting to do, the chart, he gets 90% of his post-ups when so-and-so is on the bench. Like, that would be interesting to look at, and maybe that's true. But I don't know. I feel like he does whatever he wants to do.
I agree with you. I think it's more the team offense functions better when he's at the five, just because the space.
Right. Well, that's true. Right. And that's true. That's why it's like the smaller you go, like the better you end up scoring. I think the worry, though, is that it's at some point, Ben Simmons is going to be a center, right? Kenneth Faried is a center in the league. Kevin Durant is a center. Like, that's what you're going to play, that body type, even where you're going to not see the Jokic's anymore and the Embiid's. That's what it looks like. Although you say that, and then all of a sudden you look around, look, there are a bunch of kind of big post up guys still around who are thriving. Even a guy like Harrell. Harrell's a center too, even though he's what, 6'7", maybe, right? And he doesn't shoot.
But he's a defensive liability.
He is, but not as much as they made it seem to be when after AD went down and they didn't play him anyway. Like, that was weird. But anyway, we talked about that a lot on the show. The point being that, I always say that to me, it feels like it's an inevitable that we're moving towards smaller and smaller and smaller, because when you do that, and that's when you get a more efficient offense.
Nick, I disagree with you. I think we're moving towards more skilled guys, but they're still going to be tall. Like, you look at the next draft, you got like Chet Holmgren, who's like a 7-foot wing. So, right. Technically he's a guard and he plays like a guard, but he is still 7-foot.
Okay, so that's the point I'm making too. Then, rather than say height specifically, it's like the way that the side, the big brutish, low post guy, But by the way, I say that, and then the Bucks win a title, getting offensive rebounds by punishing the Suns and the boards with Brooke Lopez and Giannis, and kind of going big. Which, by the way, could also have a thing. Some other team could do that and play two traditional big guys, hammer them on the boards. I think you can make that work too. So there's ways to have it happen. My worry is that because ratings are going down and the game is becoming so everybody's playing the same way, I wonder if it sort of is losing interest. Like, it's kind of not as exciting and interesting anymore. Very well could be one of the reasons why. Obviously, having the Bucks and the Suns in the NBA Finals, just simply there's just not a big enough fan base for those two teams to sustain a really big rating on TV. But I'm worried that there's an overall issue with this, like the way we're watching the games and how much we're enjoying it. Does that make sense?
I think the biggest issue is officiating, because every time I watch basketball with a player, with someone who's not like a big NBA fan, they're like, that was a foul? Really? Like, they complain so much. Like, come on.
And the replays.
Replay too. Yeah, that's interesting. So that's an interesting take. Is it the refs issue too? Probably. I mean, listen, I think it's everything, right? You got to factor in all these things. But that, it's funny. I should try and watch.
I still think it's the super team. I still think the super team inevitability aspect of it, where, I mean, I know that like in the 2000s, there are also like maybe like five teams that make the finals. But I think like everyone basically is resigned to the fact that if everyone stays healthy, it's Lakers and Nets in the finals. I think it's like the general consensus. And I think that happened with the Warriors also, where like there was just inevitability of the regular season that we're like, well, why do we care? The Warriors are just going to get healthy and then make the final.
Right.
Yeah, but that final is going to have like the best rating.
Right. So, but in the meantime, everyone's kind of sitting on their hands waiting for that, I guess is the point, right? So they might not watch it as much. I mean, listen, there are some really fun teams to look at and watch. You got to watch. If you're on YouTube, you can see behind me, John Morant, right? Like he's amazing. And they got a little bit better too. And no one's talking about Memphis at all. They just picked somebody up they were just involved in some deal, but not a huge deal. But who was it? What did Memphis do? Anyway, so they did something, but you know,
they got like that, that's Beverly, right?
No, they traded Chris Dunn. They picked up Chris Dunn and Carson Edwards, but they're going to probably cut both of them. So,
yeah, that's right, Chris Dunn. I mean, Chris Dunn, you know, showed some ability, but man, he's on his whatever fifth team or whatever it is now. A couple super chats. Let's take care of that. Let's take care of business real quick. Andre Garcia wants to say, are we overhyping Ben Simmons? Is he really a franchise player you give the keys to or a good number two or three option? You're right. He's not a franchise player. And that's just simply – and I think he might feel like he is, and making the All-Star team might make you feel that way, but he's without question not a franchise player. He is your you know, I suppose he could be a good number two because they did get to they did almost beat the Raptors, and they would have, you know, probably gotten the finals that year, but probably would have, could have, should have, Prada. Doesn't necessarily, you know, be as much as a great compelling argument.
Also, was he the two on that team?
Yeah. I'm going to say three. You're right. A damn great point, because Butler. I'm going to say three. He's a third option on a really good team, and that would be a really good team, because remember, the defense is also a big part of that. So that's what he is. He's not a franchise player. He does not merit, you know, a first round pick, Buddy Hield and Halliburton. You know, that would never happen. Now, if the Sixers could get that, like I said last week, I'm like, that's a no-brainer. They could bring in a really promising point guard who played that position. They also have a shooter alongside of Embiid that would really help them. And then they get a pick. Even if they don't get the pick, that's a great deal for the Sixers, and that would simply never happen. Nikhil Attar, thank you. Best friend of the breakdown. It's great to see you out there, Nikhil. Are the Lakers trying to emulate the Bucks by going big? Is this a viable strategy, or do they have enough shooters to create space now? It's funny because, yeah, they've been going big this whole time, right? When they won the title that year, they didn't get they got a lot of offensive rebounds. They didn't shoot threes. They didn't shoot threes well, and they made it all the way to the finals and won in a bubble year, which again is so, it's proving to be an anomaly. But I think the Lakers are trying to emulate what they did that year when they had JaVale and Dwight, with now Dwight and DeAndre Jordan. And so, yeah, I mean, is it emulating the Bucks or emulating themselves? Either way, they're obviously trying to get the band back together in some weird way. And it probably will work as long as LeBron is healthy and AD is healthy. Wow, another big super chat. Thank you so much, from mindfulattraction.org. It looks like he's sending it from Mexico. So, mil gracias, señor. This league is looking bad. Free agents are not going to the same team and stacking up the decks. How is that fun? Championships aren't worth the same anymore. Because if you have a chip roster, almost every free agent will go to you. I mean, we've seen this in the past a little bit, where they, you know, a guy toward the end of his career is great, like, will go and join some other people and try to form a super team. So it's not like it hasn't happened before. And it didn't seem to affect the league negatively that way back then. You know, but I suppose the argument is, isn't it more fun to watch a team draft guys, pick up a couple guys in free agency, and build that together over the course of several years and get to the championship? Yeah, I mean, that's nice too, but you're right. Obviously, what it seems like has been to be the way to do this now in the last several years is to pick them all up in like a pickup game. And that's part of it too. I think that's part of an issue, people not wanting to watch as much, obviously.
I actually love the whole super team thing, because when you look at guys like Kevin Garnett, Tracy McGrady, you know, utter all-time great talents that were stuck in subpar rosters. And to see your players, you know, just struggling like that, even Melo in New York, right? He could have went to Chicago, formed that team of emerging Jimmy Butler, Joakim Noah, that was just coming off an MVP caliber type season. Derrick Rose, he wasn't MVP Derrick Rose anymore, but 2015 Derrick Rose was still really nice. You know, this whole player empowerment thing, I love to see players, instead of shrinking in small markets or playing for dysfunctional front offices, taking their career into their whole hand. Because players, the fan bases, some fans are going to talk about, you know, either way, look at it. Either way, if you're KD, okay, you went to a 73-19, you're always stacking the deck. If you're Tracy McGrady, oh, you never made it out in the first round. So anyway, people are going to talk about you. So they might as well just,
right, Charles Barkley, you know,
best for their career.
Yeah, Barkley, Malone, the same, and they tried that. They, you know, Malone went to the Lakers, that big the Hall of Fame team, and Barkley did it in Houston, and those ended in injuries, unfortunately, to both of those guys, because they got to the end of their careers. So yeah, I mean, you know, I actually when Durant went to the Warriors, I got really excited because I could sense that this style of play wasn't going to be individualistic. There was going to be a lot of ball movement and a lot of skill and just fireworks, which is what we got. Depending on how that the style of play, you know,
we had it for one season.
Right. Right. Fair enough. It got a little bit different after the first one, but like the Philadelphia 76ers in the late 70s, they had picked up George McGinnis, who was like a, you know, Hall of Famer, to go alongside at that point. Moses Malone was there maybe. And then they had like Dr. J, and that was a bunch of individuals. They didn't really play like a team. They got beat by the Portland Trailblazers and their only title. And so that's not what I would want to see. But when you see a team that's actually like they share the ball and they spread the floor right and they just play like a team, at least from a coach's perspective, that's what I like to see. So whether or not if it is a super team like that, then I'm all for it. But if it devolves, then I'm not. You know, I just want good basketball, right? Is it a crime? You know, the thing with the Nets, by the way, is if you can stay close, if you can get like, you know, even a little 2-point lead down the stretch, you're going to get Kyrie and KD to take terrible shots. They might make those shots, but that's what they'll default to. And that's your chance to beat them. And that would be really, I would be really excited to see that because I'm always for the underdog anyway. So you have to imagine that you're going to have instances where the underdog's going to get a chance, and that's going to spur interest and make people really excited about it too. And you can't have an underdog without the overdog, right? So you got to have some of those teams. So I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum. This is a year. I think this is a very important year for the NBA. I think they need to figure out what makes people want to watch and somehow get those the ratings back up in the face of COVID either winding down or spurring up whatever is going to happen with that. They need to figure out something that the product is what the people want to watch more. I get bored. Last year I was bored. It was a tough year to watch basketball, and I haven't been able to put my finger exactly why, but I think a lot of people agree with me.
Should they bring back?
Oh, it's a good question. I mean, here's the thing. I invented the new defense.
Threes,
what's that?
It would definitely, like, everyone complained about too many threes. I think, yeah, I think he's right. It's an interesting idea. I think it'd be for nasty basketball, like in whatever, like the early 2000s with like Tim Duncan posting up. But it would take away the 3-point.
Okay. In the essence that, like, if you can hand check, you can stop some of the drives, and then you stop the rotation, then you stop the kickouts,
or you stop her like, dancing around. Okay.
Yeah, although right, because now you can hand check. I don't know. I'm trying to picture somebody trying to put a hand on James Harden's waist. He's just going to cross over and get right by you if you get in that position, right? Like, it's hard to imagine with the dribbling as good as it is now. Back in the day, it wasn't that good. And so, yeah, hand check was a lot more effective. I'm going to explore that. I'm going to talk to some NBA guys and see what they think about that, because in my mind, if you're trying to get in a position defensively where you're kind of reaching out with your hand and now your weight shifting forward, they're just going to go right by you, even if you get your hand on his hip, I think. But that's it's interesting. We haven't seen it, so it's theoretical. But that would be my take on it. I would be nervous as a defender to do that or try to do like the traditional hand check. But you never know. That might be something. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they really enjoy the freedom of movement. You know, the offensive ratings continue to go up and up and up year after year. So clearly what they're doing defensively doesn't work. It's not really effective. You need to get way out of the box, which is why I'm trying to invent this new way of playing defense, which you play behind the guy. And I'm developing it. We're going to get maybe a high school team to run it this year. Maybe I can find a college team or a national team to do it too. So we're I'm in discussions. And we'll get some more data. But I think we need to get really radical the way we're playing defense completely to try and change what's happening with the offense.
I don't understand that, Nick, because in high school basketball, you don't have great three-point shooters. So why would you – like, I understand you want to play a defense like that. But in high school basketball, unless they have great shooters, well, you don't need to play.
I don't know where you are, but, like, we're seeing more and more high school players being able to shoot the ball from, like, 3-4 feet behind the line.
Yeah, but what are their percentages? You know, I mean, most high school players are not shooting at above 30%.
Well, I mean, let's see. It's been a while. When I was coaching high school and I finished in 2013, I had one of the best shooters around, and he was around 35%.
Yeah, but I'm saying, for our offense to work, you need more. Oh, are you just talking about defending that one player? Or are you talking about the whole?
No, I created the whole zone where you play behind the guy, and I think it would wreak a lot of havoc, which is what you kind of want to do on defense anyway. But you have an interesting point because, but it's not just that; it's also taking away the pick and roll. Like if you're guarding the guy behind him, you can't set a ball screen for him. Now you can also argue that in high school they're not running a lot of pick and roll, but in certain areas of the country they are. A lot of teams have adopted it. And so you can take it away. Now, that said, my defense, I'm thinking about maybe just introducing it as a pick and roll defense where instead of icing it, where you get on the side of the guy and force him away from the ball screener, you just jump in behind him And now the ball screener has nothing to do. He's like, I can't screen you. You're behind the man. Meanwhile, the ball screener's defender is dropping, which is what he'd be doing anyway. So so I'm kind
it's
of, you know,
like
playing
the lock
with
and
it.
Trail, right? It's similar.
Yeah. It's we're doing it a little early. So, yeah, we're getting to that point because, you know, you see lock and trail all the time, right? But I'm doing – so it's not that radical, but I'm doing it sort of as a zone right off the bat, which eliminates pin downs and eliminates ball screens, eliminates shooting the three, because you're not going to shoot a three with the guy breathing down your neck. But what it also
requires – it makes a lot of sense if you're guarding someone like
– Yeah, no, I mean, it's rooted in how they guarded Harden for the Jazz guarded Harden a couple of years ago in the playoffs. So, yeah, like – but here's the thing, like at the NBA level at the very least, because people would say, yeah, why would you want to do that against – you know, these non-threats on offense. Well, at the NBA level, I want to get behind P.J. Tucker. I want P.J. Tucker to put the ball on the ground a couple times and find out what he's going to do with it. I want Jay Crowder to do that. You know, the league has at any given time, you're going to have at least two or three of those players on the court in the NBA who all want to do is catch and shoot. They don't want to sit there and dribble the ball, the guy behind, the guy in front, and, like, you know, have to make decisions. So that's what makes me excited about it versus, like, oh, we're going to just sort of contain those guys and not worry about them being a threat off the dribble or anything. But we'll see. It might crash and burn. But for right now, what I've seen –
I look forward to watching your video.
Yeah, I presented it at a clinic, and I have another session I edited with a bunch of, like, Euro Leagues level pros doing it. So, yeah, I mean, all I need now is a couple teams to just run it so I get some real, like, real data with games with refs. But the point being that we have to do something, you know. Even the switching stuff isn't really, like, working that well. The offensive efficiencies continue to go up, and that's a problem. I feel like we need and that would make it more interesting, too, to see, like, knowing a team has this. Then the question becomes, is the defense I'm describing like a base defense that you run all the time? Or is it like a 12-possession-a-game thing just to mix it up as a zone? You know, a lot of questions there that I, you know, we're still in the infancy stages. I'm working on it. But at the very least, it's not that radical because, like you said, in any kind of drop coverage for pick and roll, the guy's behind the ball handler. The other guy is in front containing, you know, hoping to get a mid-range shot out of it. I'm just sort of eliminating the ball screen part where they're not going to be able to set that because there's no one to set it on, really. By the way, it requires a whole other set of skills. To play from behind and know how to pressure that way properly is, you know, you have to learn how to do that. I'm sure there's going to be techniques we're going to develop and then also just experience. So, yeah, and my favorite part of my defense, though, is that the top guy in the defense in the zone gets to face the basket. And so when we got everyone else dialed in, he can see everything, and he was getting deflections and steals all over the place because he could finally see, whereas every other zone you'd ever see, anybody up on playing a top position would have his back turned the other way and wouldn't be able to see anybody. So that was exciting to me at the very least, so we can figure out how to make that work. So, well, listen, we've gotten to you know, the end of the show. It's a nice hour and 10 minutes so far, and I can't thank everybody enough for being out here. All the super chats, let me make sure I got everybody. Did I miss anyone? Oh my goodness, forgive me, I have a couple of super chats to take care of. Paul writes, thank you so much. For Paul, I think Simmons might not be the answer for a lot of teams just off game mentality and his confidence. He might see his own game as better than it is. I think that's true. I think he also might not be, like, you know, well, listen, I can't speak for how he is in the locker room. I don't know that for sure, but what I can tell from the body language on the court is he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who lifts people up and, like, has a joy for the game. And that might be – he needs to rediscover that, and that also may be part of it. So good call on that. And they're right, there might be a couple of very specific instances where we can find the best of Ben Simmons, but there might be a lot of other teams that will just simply don't have a roster that will benefit him. And then Kevin Castillo, thank you. Liking super teams is great if you root for players like Garnett and Melo examples, but what drives overall viewer numbers is team success. No chance, less use. Another great point as well. Right. Are you a fan of the logo or are you a fan of the players? I always felt like I was a fan of the team, but like I wanted to know the player specifically. And so it's a kind of an interesting crossover on that take because but I think you're right. For in the general sense overall, yeah, it's like the overall viewer numbers will definitely go down when the team is not doing well or doesn't feel like they have a chance to win against, you know, the Nets and the Lakers and those kind of teams. So, you know, but we've had that in the past, right? We've had these super teams before, and it really hasn't led to this as it has now. So a lot of issues. I like the refs as an idea. I think the streaming, illegal streams is probably part of it too, where there is interest there, but they're not watching in the traditional formats. And so the numbers aren't being counted the way we normally would be. I think it could be part of it too. So, you know, but yeah, Jamon says in the comments, you know, he's a fan of the sport. I want to see great basketball. That's all I want to see. I want to see ball movement, player movement, sharing, enjoy the game. You know, I want to see people enjoying themselves playing the game. Those are the things that I think are important. So speaking of enjoying, I enjoy this discussion a lot. A lot of people are out there want to talk about it on YouTube. I hope you guys came over to the green room too. And you can chop it up with me every Sunday at 9 a.m. Pacific and then Wednesdays in the afternoons on Pacific time. So that's where our show is. I can't thank you guys enough. Thank you for the super chatters. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? Hey, are you in, guys?
Happy to have you.
I'm in.
All right.